Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
ES Audio.
Hello, I'm Nick Curtis, the Evening Standard's Chief Theatre Critic. Welcome back to our theatre podcast. With me this week is our culture editor, Nancy Durand. Hello, Nancy.
Hello.
Coming up later in the show, we're going to be talking about Super High Resolution at the Soho Theatre, which I strongly urge you to see.
Yes, and it's a suitably emotionally rinsing look at the state of the NHS.
But first, we're going to be looking at My Neighbour Totoro at the Barbican by the Royal Shakespeare Company.
May has met a forest spirit called Totoro. He lives beneath the giant camphor tree in the woodland behind our house. I met him too when we were waiting for Dad's bus.
This is an adaptation of the Studio Ghibli film by Hayao Miyazaki. This is, I think, very much the Royal Shakespeare Company's attempt to produce a commercial hit along the lines of Matilda. Basically, two young girls are moved out of Tokyo in 1955 by their father to a rural part of Japan because their mother is ill in hospital. And there they are befriended by this huge, strange, sort of half bear, half rabbit, half lion.
It's a woodland spirit.
It's a woodland spirit. It is a woodland spirit. But that said, it doesn't really do much. It sort of floats through the action, being, you know, sort of giving them nuts to plant or, you know, sort of seeds to plant.
Something to cuddle.
And just being sort of generally bemused by the world around it. You know, it seems to be half dominant, half bemused by the world around it.
We have planted the seeds in your garden in front of the house. We thought a little forest might grow to give you some shade when you come home.
And it is obviously, I think, in some ways a manifestation of their upset and grief. It's a consoling figure conjured out of the forest by them, I think, isn't it?
Here is a picture of May as a crab. May has drawn you a picture too, of Totoro.
There's a lot to like, and it is very, very, it's visually incredible, isn't it?
Absolutely.
The Totoro itself is about 15 feet tall, I would say.
It is magical. It's genuinely magical. And you know, there's these incredible puppeteers.
Yes.
They are so good, and they're sort of part of the action and not quite part of the action. And sometimes they're almost like wood sprites of their own. They're like extra sort of weird creatures, and they behave like that, and they kind of interact slightly, you know, in a kind of fourth wally way with the audience. And then the soot sprites are all just on these, they're just basically fluff on bendy sticks.
Aren't they? Yes.
But
yes,
they move like a kind of murmuration of starlings or something. And they, you know, you can immediately let go of the fact that you can see like 12 people, you know, tramping about a stage in black outfits.
Yes, they play quite sort of loosely with the visibility of the puppeteers in a way that people did in War Horse and, to a certain extent, Lion King all those years ago. But there's a wonderful moment when a bus draws up and the guy who's playing the bus driver sort of steps out in front of it and then realizes he's shown himself and has to step behind it, back into it, and it's all quite funny and quite charming. And as well as the soot spirits, I love the chickens, which
are going to
just rubber chickens on sticks, which just sort of flop around all over the stage.
But they're so funny.
They're very, very charming.
And they move just like chickens. They're so chickeny.
Yes.
Yeah, I love them.
They're the most chickeny chickens we've seen on the London stage this year.
Exactly. Is there an award for that?
There is. So top marks the puppeteers here. The man in charge is the wonderfully named Basil Twist. We should mention also it's directed by Phelan McDermott, who is, I think, I mean, he's not your classic RSC director. He came up through in his own company, Improbable Theatre, which improvised shows at the drop of, you know, from nothing really each evening. He's a fabulously inventive director.
And actually that's interesting for something like this, which is such a faithful adaptation of the film to the point that there are the kind of filmic longueurs of watching the cat bus kind of float around, which go on for way too long.
Yeah.
It's 2 hours and 45 minutes long. That's a really long time for a show which is essentially designed for children.
Yes, that's true.
And I went on like a Wednesday night or something, and I would say there is something over 1,000 seats in the Barbican Theatre. Every single one was full, and I maybe saw 8 to 12 kids. and everyone else was a grown up. I'm sure it's different on other nights, but I was a bit like, oh, it's a cult.
Yes.
It's totally a cult.
I think it may well be a cult. I mean, I think the Miyazaki films particularly do have that cult status, don't they? So the moving force behind this stage adaptation is the composer of the music for the original film, Joe Hisaishi, who was charged by Miyazaki if a stage adaptation were ever to be done, he was basically put in charge of it. And so there is quite a lot of music in the show.
Yeah, there is, which I think is probably quite faithful to the original film. Again, and by the way, it's been adapted by the writer Tom Morton Smith, who did Oppenheimer, completely different. No songs in that, as I recall, although there might be a bit of jazz.
Might have been.
The thing about the music that I found was, I think it's the thing that I find annoying, actually, in the original films, which is that it feels a little bit twee.
Yes.
To me. So, for example, when one of the girls goes missing, there's a song which is, it's sung, I think, in partly in Japanese and partly in English, and there's a song which is called Where Has She Gone? And it felt really weird and literal and completely took me out of the moment.
Yes.
But, you know, again, that's something very, very like the movie, and if you love the movies, you'll love that.
I quite like the fact that the score was half sung in English and half in Japanese.
Yeah,
because
that's
it is
beautiful.
An English language version by Tom Morton Smith of a very, you know, Japanese
piece
story.
Of work. Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think that sort of bridged that gap. Really,
yeah, definitely.
I think let's
talk very briefly, if you don't mind, about the acting.
Yes,
it's kind of fine. I think I thought that the women playing the two girls, I think I liked them a bit more than you did, if I remember in your review.
I thought they were running through every sort of cliche of child acting, going, you know, from the sort of slightly gawky physical disorganization to rocking on their heels to sort of yowling and face planting all the time.
But it does also feel very, very honouring of the film.
Yes.
And, I think playing children is really difficult. So they do go down that very physical route. I think they do a decent job. It's I think it's May Mack who plays May, who is only 4 years old. She's a grown woman playing a four-year-old. It's not easy.
Yeah.
And Ami Okamura-Jones.
Yes, that's right.
Who plays the elder sister, Satsuki. I think given what they have to work with, I think they do quite a good job. There's another child role which I think was somewhat overplayed.
The young boy.
Yeah. But, you know, in a way, a production like this isn't really about that, actually. It's just about the kind of world weaving that you get on stage.
I agree. It's about the imagery and about it's about drawing, as you say, drawing you into that world, creating that sort of magic. It does succeed to a very large extent to do that.
I'm not a particular Ghibli fan. I kind of decided to watch a load of them under lockdown because lots of people love them, and I kind of watched about five or six of them, and I was like, okay, yeah, sure, don't need to do that again. So I wasn't expecting much, but certainly the first half of it, I was actually utterly charmed. As soon as they started riffing on the credit sequence when it opens, which is really sweet, I was sort of like, ooh, that's so lovely. And I was kind of smiling and thought it was wonderful. And my friend, who had also been a bit dubious, was also rather charmed. But there's a lot of it.
There's a hell of a lot of it. There is. It's true. And I'm with you on Studio Ghibli. Half of it I find too whimsical. Half of it I find frankly creepy.
Yeah,
you know,
a bit.
Not just the sort of supernatural element that creeps into so many of the films, including this story. And I went into this with a certain degree of trepidation as well, because I don't really understand why so many theatres are adapting films at the moment. I think it's a very strange dynamic that's going on. One thing I want to add about the cat bus, which is also inflated and hangs around, is that when it's flying away from you, you do see that it's got a rather large pair of cat testicles, which once you've seen it, you just cannot unsee.
I'm so glad that I didn't reread your review before I went in, because I read it again afterwards and I hadn't noticed, and I'm really pleased, because that would have absolutely destroyed me.
Yeah, that would have ruined the last hour for you. So there you go. There you have it. In Studio Ghibli films, cats are unspayed. Right, let's go to the ads. Coming up in the second half, super high resolution at Soho Theatre. We'll be back after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So our second show this week is Super High Resolution at Soho Theatre. Nancy, tell us what this one's about.
Well, it's the story of a junior doctor working in the NHS. I mean, if you think this is going to hurt, but with a female doctor, and it's perhaps a bit less played for laughs, if you like, if something yes. quite so grim as if this is going to hurt is played for laughs. It's not a one-woman show, but there's one person on stage pretty much all the time, which is the leading role of Anna, who is the doctor. And we first meet her nursing a bloody nose because she's just been punched in the face by a very drunk patient into whom she was trying to insert a cannula, which gives you a good indication of what a difficult time she's having.
I think it's also fair to say it sort of goes downhill for her from there, doesn't
yeah, which
it?
Which is bad.
It is bad. I think This Is Going to Hurt is a very useful reference point for this because it does have that sense of grind to it, of people being slowly ground down by the demands of an incredibly grueling underfunded job and underfunded service. It is actually very funny though as well. It's quite the man who has punched her in the nose, you presume, was on a stag do because she's being sort of
apologized to
yeah. by a man dressed as a leprechaun.
Yes.
Who is not the puncher, but he's a friend of the puncher.
Yes, exactly. And he's his brother-in-law, as we discover.
And he plays a larger romantic role. I don't think we're giving too much away to say that later on. Well, as I say, things do not go particularly well for Anna. I got a slight whiff of Tennessee Williams off this on the sort of, from the sort of looming inevitability and the sort of grueling punishment that she's put through on this.
Yeah.
I think you said to me you didn't find it an easy watch.
I found it a tough watch. I found it really affecting. I was really surprised when I came out how upset I was. Like the ending, I just kind of came out of the Soho Theatre and took myself off to John Lewis and nearly had a breakdown. I was like, I can't cope with this. It's too much.
Yeah.
It's like, do not try and go Christmas shopping after you've seen this show at a matinee. I can recommend not doing that. But I think it wasn't that I kind of came out going, oh, life is so tough for junior doctors. It's not like we don't know that. You know, we're aware of
yes.
that. We've all seen or read This Is Going to Hurt. It's well known that this is a very, very difficult job. I think it was down to me being so deeply affected by the central performance by Jasmine Blackborough.
Yes.
She's almost never off the stage. She's always trying to do the right thing, make things better, help people, and at the same time crumbling before our eyes. I just found it really hard to watch.
It's quite subtly done though, isn't it, as well? A lot of it is unspoken and sort of understated. Her sister appears on stage and you understand that their father is ill and
yeah.
and probably dying. There's a hint that something nasty happened to their mother. And
yeah, you do get that feeling, don't you? But they never say it.
They never say it exactly. And unlike This Is Going to Hurt, where the character is always sort of shoving your face in how awful everything is, here she's all the time sort of saying, no, it's fine, I can cope, I'm fine.
Mm.
But you know she's living in a tiny, horrible flat and, you know, she's sleeping in her clothes or she's sleeping in her car, doesn't have time to go to family events, doesn't have time to visit the sick father, things
yeah.
like that, isn't as invested in her sister's life or her niece's life as her sister would like.
Yeah.
It's written really, really well.
Yeah, I think so.
As you say, I think it's absolutely brought home by Jasmine Blackborough wonderfully. I think it's a terrific, understated, internalised performance. There's a lovely old Coronation Street line from Bette Lynch who said, this isn't a smile, it's a scream with a lid on it. And you felt this was what she was
yeah.
doing. She was just barely containing her despair all the time.
Absolutely. You know when you see someone and you just think, oh yeah, she's really got something.
Yeah.
I think that actress should really be going places, actually.
I'm delighted for her because the only thing I'd seen her in previously was a play called The Breach at Hampstead Theatre, where she was very good and the play was very, very bad.
That's upsetting.
And it's always a shame if you see a good performance in what you do not consider to be a bad piece of work. So I'm glad that here she's matched by the material.
Yeah, I really like the set, I have to say. Yes. Very, very straightforward, very, very simple. Soho Theatre is not a big theatre, and it's just, you know, a straight across stage. It's entirely hospital curtains. So they pull them along left and right and forward and back and reveal, you know, one of those hideous plastic chairs, perhaps with a patient in it or not, or just a small amount of furniture which shows you a bedsit,
yes,
you know, or a pub. But it's all done with the curtains, and it's ingenious, and it's simple, and it's probably quite cheap.
Yes.
And it's brilliant, I
and
think.
It's done with lighting as well, isn't it? That just a swish of a curtain, a change of lighting, stain, suddenly you're in it completely.
And the name of the designer is Andrew Edwards.
Yes.
And I found that really, really effective.
Yes, we should say the writer is Nathan Ellis, who I think gets under the skin of a female lead character really well.
Yeah, brilliantly.
And the director is Blanche McIntyre, who, you know,
very good.
Is very, very, yes, I mean, just a terrific director. And here, I think, absolutely captures the very best parts of the script and sort of whizzes through the weaker moments, I think, in quite a clever way. One thing I did want to mention is the monologues, which again I think are a very good way of saying quite a lot with quite a little, that you just basically see her quick fire responses to patients quite a lot of the time, saying, "No, I'm not the nurse. Yes, I am a doctor. Yes, I am quite young. No, I'll get to you in time. No, I can't hurry."
Yeah, sorry, continuously. It's really, after a bit, you kind of go, wow, you're having a terrible day.
You do, but also quite funny, there's quite a lot of, it got up there accidentally.
Yeah, yes. They do a lot with those short stylized moments,
yes.
And I thought I wouldn't like them, but actually, Jasmine Blackborough, she sells those moments in the script and completely, like, draws you in, I think.
I absolutely agree.
I will just add, there were some other good performances. I thought that Leah Whittaker was good as Anna's sister, Becca. She's great. She's kind of got that slightly brittle but loving thing. She does it very...
Yes.
Everyone is very understated and do really well. And there's the sort of cute distraction character, as you say, who becomes a bit more important later, played by Lewis Shepherd, who I think it's his debut on stage.
It's his stage debut, yes.
Which is great. And I think, you know, considering... He has to start drunk, and drunk is really hard to do well.
Yes.
And I think overall, across his performance, I thought he was really good, actually.
He has a remarkable ease on stage for somebody who's not been on stage a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And certainly been making his professional debut here.
And I also want to mention Hayley Carmichael, who plays an older patient who has hurt herself. And her thread colours the whole of the play, and I think it was rather well done.
Agreed. I like Catherine Cusack as well, who is a very demanding consultant who just presumes that that Anna, the character, will pick up shifts required all the time, all the slack. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. It's a really good one, I think.
It's a really good one. And as you say about new theatre, one goes because it's taking the temperature of now. And this show opened the night that it was announced that the NHS was suffering even greater problems than it did under COVID or under the heights of lockdown. So so it did feel like it's bang up to the minute.
Absolutely. It's actually only on until the 3rd of December, so I would urge people to get tickets because it's dead good.
So would I. This has been the Evening Standards Theatre Podcast. I'm Nick Curtis.
And I'm Nancy Durrant.
You can find us online at standard.co.uk/culture or hashtag The Leader Podcast on Twitter. The Leader Podcast will be back tomorrow from 4 p.m. and we'll see you again next Sunday for a brand new episode.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.